Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Jessica Pearson, Mark Beckhoff. A Dog's World is their new presentation of imagining, this is a thought experiment, imagining the lives of dogs in a world without humans. So we've gone through the home dogs, the free-ranging dogs, and the feral dogs. We've made the transition. We're now in a world where there's no memory, first generation, second generation, third generation of human beings, Homo sapiens. The dogs are in pack behavior. Then they've found a style that suits them in the niche where they live, desert to forest to high latitudes, low, and we're dealing with some truths that we can imagine for the future. And Jessica, one of the things that I was most impressed by is that there is no future dog. There is a universal dog. We've talked about its characteristics, but I'm keen on its psychology, on what it would imagine the world to be. Does it see itself as top of the food chain, these dogs hunting in packs? Because my observation is that wolves are, in their environment, certainly dominant. Will dogs in the future see themselves as dominant, Jessica?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think it could go either way. I think my intuitive answer to your question is dogs are just going to see themselves as a sort of fluid part of their ecosystem, that they don't have this sense of the sort of meta place in the world the way we might imagine them to be. They will just be who they are and do what they need to do to get by.
Mark, I come to you with the wild animal in dogs. It returns, but presumption in your book is that it doesn't return to the wolf. Is that correct, Mark? Or does it? Is the wolf the design dog for a world without humans?
Yeah, we say that they won't go back to being wolves. But yeah, in many ways, I think it is. I think that's a great question. I mean, they'll live alone. They'll live in mated pairs or pairs, and they'll live in packs just as wolves do today. They'll live in packs of different sizes and different composition as wolves do today. But what we mean that they won't go back to being wolves is, you know, maybe down the pike in 100,000 years they might, but we don't want people to think that they're going to go back to being wolves in terms of their morphology or necessarily, you know, the way that they negotiate their wild communities, because I think on average they will be smaller than the wolves who are around at a particular time. So that's just I always say as an ethologist, I'd like to be the fly on the wall, maybe the last human who's around who can actually record these data. But I think they'll be wolf-like in their social organization and sociality.
Jessica, what about the pack behavior? Is there anything we can speculate about how the pack behavior of the future dog will differ from what you and Mark observe the pack behavior of coyotes or wolves?
I think it will depend on who or what dogs are eating, and just what their role within a given ecosystem is. And if dogs are going to rely on prey that's large and that would be difficult to take down on their own, then it's more likely they will need to live in packs like wolf packs that have organized hunting behavior. If, on the other hand, dogs or some dogs have evolved toward a smaller size, maybe they live on mice or insects or berries, there would be less need for pack behavior, less need for cooperative hunting. So I think it really it depends, and it could be that some dogs will become more like wolves and other dogs, other populations of dogs will not.
Mark, will their memory, their DNA memory, because we know that exists in evolution, will it be an advantage that they've spent time with us? I mean, after all, we brought them out of nature. Is the theory, 10, 15, 20, 50, 40,000 years ago, having spent several generations, many generations, tens of thousands of years with us, will they have an advantage back in nature?
That's a great question. I mean, in all honesty, I wouldn't have the foggiest idea. I just think that, you know, a lot will still be retained in their genes and their brains. And, you know, they still have that potential to do certain things. One behavior that people say we've selected out is the killing bite, for example. You know, we allow them to play, then we interfere. But we need to be careful there, because a lot of the free-ranging and feral dogs do quite well now in terms of hunting. And people actually in certain geographic locations think of free-ranging and feral dogs as pests and having a major effect on the biodiversity or the number of different species we see in a certain area. So once again, I think they'll be fine. And maybe they'll tap, you know, they'll have to tap into something that has been latent. But when we were talking before, they're smart, they're adaptable. And in order to exist in wild communities, they're going to have to be able to do certain things. And they're going to have to know who's friend and who's foe.
Jessica, just 30 seconds. What have you learned as a bioethicist from this thought experiment? 30 seconds.
I've learned that thinking about dogs just as our pets is really a very limited way to think about who they are, and that in order to sort of give my own dog a good life, it helps me to see her through this lens of being on her own and being a wild animal, and what does she need, what's interesting to her, what gives her life richness and meaning. Independent of me. I'm not necessarily the center of her world.
Jessica Pierce and Mark Beckoff, A Dog's World, Imagining the Lives of Dogs in a World Without Humans. Not yet, but it's possible. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.